We're shipping Easter gifts with a rapid-fire round of questions. Ready?
Yes, my gift. Can you pack it?
Yep.
Ship it?
Yes.
Guarantee it?
Of course.
Oh, send gift baskets?
For sure.
Protect electronics? Dog-proof it? Return it if they hate it?
Yes, no, and yeah.
Are you the UPS store?
Hey, we have a winner!
Woo!
Visit theupsstore.com/guarantee for full details. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, prices, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. The UPS store. Visit a store today.
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt.
And I'm Sir Jimmy of House Nuts. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we're into Catelyn 7 of A Storm of Swords, The Red Wedding. It feels like we've been building up to this for quite literally years, Matt.
Yeah, we have been. And we've been talking about it for the past couple of weeks, being like, wow, we're getting close. Well, we're here. This is it. Arguably my least favorite chapter. And my least favorite scene in the entire show. I'm serious. This is the chapter that I struggle reading the most, and the chapter and the episode where I just like, I watched it the first time, and anytime I've kind of just like rewatched some episodes of Game of Thrones here and there, I skip it. It to me is the hardest moment. I think it is for me the hardest moment in the whole series.
Oh, bro. It's frightening to me that now that I've read this chapter, I think 8 or 9 times, however many times I've read it, it still puts a lump in my throat by the end of it. The very end of the chapter when she's getting her hair pulled back, Catelyn's getting her hair pulled back, and she's like, "Oh, don't cut my hair. Ned loves my hair." Oh, bro, it got me. I was like, "Oh, I'm gonna cry." And my heart's going with the drums. And also, I mean, we're gonna jump into the chapter, but I just want to say, like, George's writing of the chapter is so good because he does so many things with the show Don't Tell that like illustrate what's really happening through Catelyn's eyes at the moment. And it's so powerful. It's just excellent writing in many, many ways. I'm with you. It's very hard to read, but I'm always impressed with like how much it affects me years and years and years later. And it reminds me always why this is my favorite book of all time. This is my favorite series of all time, and George is probably my favorite writer of all time. So,
Well, we got a little bit of news. We're going to talk about George as well, but yeah, I would agree with everything you just said about this chapter. And something, you know, interesting, and I want to bring this back up when we get to the chapter, is there's not many chapters where you get a major death from the POV, right? Like Ned Stark's death is not a POV chapter for Ned.
Yeah.
It's from Arya. And obviously the show, it's a different medium, so you can kind of see it. But yeah, I mean, from here, it is Catelyn's point of view. So a lot to break. We're going to break it all down. We're going to do a big, big episode here today. So what, Jimmy, we have a little bit of news. So these things I thought were going to be totally different. And I thought, hey, we're just going to make a fun little episode about this. And but essentially, both of these things kind of got connected. Right. Mm-hmm. And maybe he actually edited the post, because now I'm looking and I think I only see one post. Oh, no, there are two. So George posted the other day talking about big news. Right. Yeah. That he was, I have some big news to share. And it was like D-Day. Right. And we're thinking, whoa, what's that? Big news on April 8th. I said, no, it was not going to be the delivery of Winds of Winter. Don't go there. Had nothing to do with that. And I think he actually edited it, and he might have deleted it. There was another post I thought he had as well. Here it is. Yeah. So the day before, April 7th, he had one, and he said, something else is going on April 8th. No, I'm not announcing the completion of Winds of Winter, the 6th volume in A Song of Ice and Fire. Please don't get started on any rumors to that effect. I'm so tired of having to issue denials every time some offhand comment of mine must have nothing to do with Winds. Somehow convinces half the internet the book is imminent.
It's he not. Might have been talking about me there.
He's definitely talking about us. It's not. Maybe I need to stop making offhand comments. Then he went on to talk about a bunch of other stuff. Well, I thought it had nothing to do with this, because then he goes in to talk about, you know, some of the books he edits, and yeah. I totally thought that's what it was going to be. He did mention that he's seen pretty much all of Knight of Seven Kingdoms, loves it. He talks a little bit about the Iron Throne, the play that's coming, yeah. Says we're getting closer, and I'm, you know, we'll know a lot more by the end of the year, and then he talks about some other stuff. So anyway, I thought that was going to be most of his post, and then the next day I saw this thing, right, which was that the direwolves, the scientists have recreated,
yes,
through whatever DNA splicing, all this stuff they do, right, air quotes here, direwolves, because there's a little bit of controversy about it. I think it's super cool, but the company is called Colossal Biosciences out of Dallas, and they have, welcome to Direwolf Day, they have recreated direwolves. And I just thought, hey, that's going to be a fun, cool little thing for us to talk about. Dire wolves are back. But then George makes this big post, and he's holding one. They personally invited him out there to see this dire wolf.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll talk about that a little bit here, Jimmy. And then we can talk about why I actually think it is connected to Winds of Winter.
Oh, my God. You know, when I read that post, you know, obviously it's a bit narcissistic of me to think that one George would ever listen to anything we do or hear about it. But I did have a moment where I was like, I wonder if this is my fault that he's putting this in this blog post. I don't think it necessarily is. I hope it's not, because if my favorite author dislikes me, I would be very sad, like very, very sad.
Well, look, let me tell you this. All right. This is my thought on the whole thing. You know, George makes this big post. Hey, I have a big post tomorrow. It's not about Winds of Winter. I don't want to send the internet into rumors. But today, you and I, in our chapter that we're reading, is the Red Wedding, right? So George Martin's has been setting us up, right? Hasn't he been setting us up for the past couple weeks in our chapters that we're reading here, saying, oh, as long as we get the gift of, you know, House Ride and we go in, we're safe. Nothing can go wrong. And then you know what happens? The opposite. Okay. Just like in chapter one of Game of Thrones, Grumpkins and Snarks, they all live beyond the wall. And you know what happens? Direwolves come back. Okay. And what happens when the direwolves come back? Magic begins to come back. Okay. The winds of winter begin.
They're going
to
roast you. Flowing.
Begin flowing. So, I mean, you can say, George, oh, I make an offhanded comment about winds. This has nothing to do with it. But you've tricked us too many times. Right? How many times have you tricked us? And what you say is totally the opposite. Winds will be out in 2014. Well, it wasn't. Okay. So at this point, we just believe the opposite of what you say. You might as well have just made it on April Fool's Day if you really wanted us to believe it.
Oh my God, man. Oh.
When the direwolves come back in Game of Thrones, that's when you know, oh, direwolves shouldn't be out here. Well, direwolves shouldn't exist in our world, but they're back.
So
just saying,
is this where we tell everyone that it's actually like a gray wolf? And
because now the opportunity exists for him to come out on stage with a full fucking dire wolf next to him and say Winds is back. Okay. I mean, next they're gonna create a dragon, right? Maybe that's what this really is all about. Maybe that was, he's like, I have to wait until the dire wolves, the actual dire wolves, are back.
I just saw people saying direwolves came back before Winds of Winter was released, and I was like, yeah,
direwolves before GTA 6. So yeah. You know. So, but it is pretty cool. I'll share this image here. It's kind of cool, and he's holding it.
I mean, it is very cute.
Didn't they name it? They named it Romulus and Remus. Yeah,
I thought one of them was named Khaleesi.
Oh, maybe you're right.
Like, he says, dumb is that?
Maybe there's more than two, but he says, and I met Romulus and Remus too.
Yeah,
they're twins.
So I'll be the downer now. I'm pretty sure that this is not really a dire wolf, and it's just a gray wolf that was like purposely bred in some certain way, but I don't know enough about it to really talk about it, except for the fact that I am very suspicious of a company putting up like luxury animals. Like, I feel like it's, yeah, Tiger King 2.0 or 3.0, yeah, at this point. So I'm a little suspect. And I wonder if one day we're going to have a documentary on HBO about this and they're going to show this blog post and be like, they even fooled George R. R. Martin, you know?
Yeah. Okay,
and we're still waiting on When's a Winner.
Jeez. All right. So I have it pulled up here. So yes, the Romulus and Remus are two of the wolves and there's a puppy. I don't know if that's, are they, anyway, and the puppy, a female puppy is Khaleesi.
Okay. I see.
Yeah. So Romulus. Yeah. And I also thought, I'm trying to remember, I thought that there was some sort of like ancient Roman prophecy or something that Rome would return one day when Romulus and Remus returned or something. And I was trying to look that up. I feel like we're honest,
that seems very strategic by them to name them that then, because that sounds like something that would go viral.
Right.
Like, I feel like that's really good marketing.
Right. Because Romulus and Remus are the brothers, Rome. Yeah.
Why wouldn't they name them like after the Stark children though? Like especially Khaleesi, like name it Arya.
I know.
Or not Nymeria. But I mean, like there's a bazillion other options. Khaleesi doesn't.
I mean, for years I've been wondering what apocalypse we're going to get first. Is it going to be a zombie apocalypse? Is it going to be a robot apocalypse? Maybe now we're heading towards the Jurassic Parkalypse.
You think so?
I mean, it seems like that's next. They said they're going to do woolly mammoths and.
Yeah, but are we talking about like just putting a sweater on an elephant and being like, look, it's a woolly mammoth.
A Tasmanian tiger. I mean,
I don't know. Somebody did try to find the Titanic with a Xbox 360 Mad Cats controller. So anything's possible.
Whoa, buddy. First of all, it was a Logitech PS2 controller.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That
is infinitely more intelligent and safer. Yes.
Yeah. Let's not tarnish the semi-decent name of Mad Cats. All right. With the
Mad Cats. That's a throwback.
That is. Well, all right. Hey, with that, I think we'll dive into the chapter because this is a big one. This is a doozy. So here we are. The Red Wedding. Catelyn listens to the continuous pounding noise of the drums. The musicians are in the hall and playing. She is seated between Ryman Frey and Roose Bolton during the wedding feast. She remarks to herself how joyless the wedding is and watches as Rob dances with several of the Frey maids and Edmure doubts on his soon-to-be wife, Rosalind. Catelyn becomes more wary when she learns that Oliver, Perwin, and Alexander Frey are not in attendance at the wedding. She notices Merritt Frey trying to drink the Great John under the table, and finally Lord Walder calls for the bedding. Rob does not participate as the Great John carries a weeping Rosalind to the bedchamber. Suddenly, things grow more ominous in the hall as Dacey Mormont goes up to Edwin Frey and asks him if he wants to dance, but he pushes her away violently. The musicians begin to play a new song, and Catelyn recognizes to her horror as the Reigns of Castamere and sees Edwin leaving. She takes off after him, and when she grabs his arm, he feels the rings of chainmail beneath. Suddenly, it all makes sense to her. The Freys missing from the wedding and Rosalind crying. The musicians turn out to be crossbowmen and the wedding becomes a slaughter. Catelyn watches in horror as a crossbow bolt pierces Rob's shoulder and another in his leg as he topples over. Small John throws a table over him to save him from three more bolts. Robin Flint is surrounded by the Freys, their daggers rising and falling. Sir Wendell Manderly is felled by a quarrel through the mouth. Small John bludgeons Sir Raymond Frey across the face with a leg of mutton, but when reaches for his sword belt, a crossbow bolt drives him to his knees. Lucas Blackwood is cut down by Sir Hostin Frey. One of the Vances is hamstrung by Black Walder as he wrestles with Sir Horace High. Crossbows take Donald Locke, Owen Norrie, and half a dozen more. Young Sir Benfrey Frey seizes Dacey Mormont by the arm, who smashes him in the face with a wine flagon. She runs for the door, but Sir Ryman comes through with Frey men-at-arms and skins his axe into Dacey's stomach. Northmen begin pounding through the other door as Catelyn takes them for rescue for half a heartbeat until one of them decapitates Small John. Catelyn realizes that she must try to intervene and save her son's life. She sees a dagger on the floor and crawls towards it. Determined to kill Lord Walder, then Rob stumbles to his feet, an arrow in his chest in addition to the other two. Lord Walder, who is in the midst of slaughter, sits on the throne watching greedily, signals a halt to the music, and mocks Rob. Catelyn grabs Jingle Bell Frey and puts a dagger to the halfwit's throat. She begs Walder to spare her son, trade a son for a son, but the old man says that's a grandson and he was never much use. A man in dark armor and pale pink cloak spotted with blood steps up to Rob, saying Jaime Lannister sends his regards. He thrusts his longsword through Rob's heart and twists. Catelyn keeps her promise and slits the poor halfwit's throat, and then begins to laugh and shout. While someone says she's lost her wits, someone else says, make an end. She is grabbed from behind and feels steel drawn across her own throat.
Yeah, man. I got chills just you reading the summary. It's brutal. And I want to kind of start at the ending here. I think the decision to have Catelyn kill Jingle Bell is the most poignant of it all, actually, because she had to kill him. Right. If we look at that act in isolation, that act is brutal and barbaric and unworthy of someone like Catelyn Stark. However, this entire series to this point, to this chapter, we have been told that Catelyn Stark loves her children, that Catelyn Stark would do anything for her children and for her family, minus Jon Snow. And if she had not slit the throat and shown mercy or anything, it would have almost been a detriment to all the buildup to this point. But if you look at it in isolation, she executed someone who is extraordinarily vulnerable, right? Mm-hmm. It's kind of mentioned he's a fool and everything. Like it's kind of a horrible act from Catelyn in isolation, but because of who her character is, she had to do it. She had to. There is no, if George would have had her spare him, it would have honestly been far worse. I think the chapter loses a lot of its impact. Catelyn Stark takes a life after seeing her son die. Like, she had to pull that knife across his throat. So that's one of the things that stuck out to me on this reread. And another thing that really stuck out to me is just how uneasy the wedding is. And how it's not very joyous, because in my mind, I and I've read it so many times, I always kind of picture it being a 180, but it isn't at all, right? No. There's a gloom over this entire thing. People are acting oddly, and it doesn't feel merry. And whenever he's explaining, George is writing about the atmosphere at the wedding, how you can't, you know, even raise your drink without elbowing someone. It's hot, and it smells bad. People have body odor. It's just like this really, like, almost grotesque scene of humans in a way that it's like almost, I don't want to say animalistic, but we'll go with that. Like the base level of humanity, like body odor, mm-hmm. being crowded and sweating and gritty and grimy and drinking. Like, it's, and we're about to see one of like the most basic human instincts, which is like retaliation and vengeance, be explored in the chapter. So I don't know. I think George just sets the stage super well.
Yeah, I'd agree. This is one of his best written chapters by far. I mean, and even from the beginning, I'll jump right to the beginning. The drums were pounding, and her head with them. Pipes wailed and flutes trilled from the musician's gallery at the floor of the hall. Fiddles screeched, horns blew, and skins skirred in a lively tune, but the drumming drove them all. The sounds echoed off the rafters. Whilst the guests ate, drank, and shouted at one another below, Walder Frey must be deaf as a stone to call this music. Catelyn sipped a cup of wine and watched Jingle Bell prance to the sounds of Alysanne. At least she thought it was meant to be Alysanne. With these players, it might have easily been the Bear and the Maiden Fair, which is also, you know, a deceptive piece, right? So you start off and you get that as well. Outside, the rain still fell, but within the twins, the air was thick and hot. A fire roared and the hearth of and rows of torches burned smokily from the iron sconces on the wall. Yet most of the heat came off the bodies of the wedding guests. There's a nice little piece there as well. Jammed in so thick along the benches that every man who tried to lift his cup poked his neighbor in the ribs. Also, your neighbors are going to be poking you in the ribs with daggers later. Even on the dais, they were closer than Catelyn would have liked. She had been placed between Sir Ryman Frey and Roose Bolton and had gotten a good noseful of both. Sir Ryman drank as if Westeros was about to run short of wine and sweated it all out under his arms. He had bathed in lemon water, she judged, but no lemon could mask so much sour sweat. Roose Bolton had a sweeter smell to him, yet no more pleasant. He sipped hypocras in preference to wine or mead, but ate but little. Yeah. I mean, even in those first few paragraphs there, you can see George setting everything up, right? The fact that you've got You know, they could be poked your neighbor in the ribs. It's all,
yeah, this is not static description. He's describing things for a very specific purpose in the way that he is doing so. Even whenever he describes Bruce Bolton's actions and looks, he is actually building out, you know, the Bolton vibe that we're going to get post Red Wedding. So none of this is static. It's all very active.
Yeah. Yeah. So Jimmy, we can go back and talk a little bit about this. Just what were your thoughts reading it this time on what did you pull from this chapter on now? You're like, I don't know, seventh or eighth time reading this chapter in the series.
Well, I think it really is that the decision at the end to have, as a writer, to have Catelyn slit the throat. I think my whole thing about that is just knowing that that's the perfect moment. And also just being surprised at once again, that I feel emotions during this, that my heart rate rises. It's just kind of insane. And I read this fairly often. It's not like, oh, it's been 5 years since I read this. You know, I read it almost every year. And when I do, it always has an effect on me. So that's always impressive. It's kind of crazy to think about this, though, Matt. This was the chapter I imagine George set out to write from very early on in the series. I won't say from the inception, but I imagine very close to the beginning of writing this series, he was thinking about this chapter and this scene. For him to get here and to write it the way he did and deliver is similar to it coming down to the shot clock at zero and, you know, a LeBron James or a Kobe or Michael Jordan hitting the game winner. Right.
Yeah, I would say that this likely would have been one of the, when he was originally planning this as a trilogy, right? And then it turned into five books and then it turned into seven. This was still probably always going to be one of the big key moments in the middle of that trilogy.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Whatever. And so it's kind of interesting to think, because even still, you could even in the idea of this being, it is really the middle point, because this is arguably, I would, for at least everything that takes place in Westeros, so you take Danny out of the situation, take Danny out of the story, think just kind of block that out for a second, this is arguably the biggest turning point in all of the books we have so far. This is probably the biggest turning point in all of Westeros.
Yeah, it's the biggest hope crushing moment. To feel like all hope is lost, and then the back half of the series being building that back up. Now, the crazy thing is, Matt, is that not only is the Red Wedding in this book, but the Purple Wedding is as well.
Yeah.
And the fact that George went back to back in the same book, we'll never see it's like again. I've read a lot of fantasy books. Okay. I'm not an expert, but I've read a good amount of them. And there's a huge trend of everything's more grim in fantasy since George R. R. Martin did A Song of Ice and Fire. Oh, characters die. And I hear people discount George, all the time with, oh, he just kills off characters. If you can read this book and that's what you take from this, I honestly think that you're not a very good reader. I think your reading comprehension is in the gutter. I think it's in the absolute shitter, because a worse writer, okay, would have said, and at that moment when Catelyn saw the mail, she knew it was over. Someone would have given it away. But we come to the realization of what is happening with Catelyn moment to moment, which is absolutely incredible to do. Literally leading us on each word that comes next. I can think of books on one hand out of the however many I've read at this point, probably over 1,000, right? I can books on one hand that have done that to me. And To boil it down to say that, oh, this is a book that just kills all the characters and it's shock value, I think is grossly underestimating the impact that the craft has, the craft of writing has, and why books are special. We read books for things like this. That's why I read, at least, to feel something, to be out of body, and it does it every single time. I think it's just absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. I agree. A point I want to pull from this, and this kind of goes to what you were thinking, what you were talking a little bit about, where she makes the decision to kill Jingle Bells, is the line, Jaime Lannister sends his regards.
Oh, what a complex line.
Right, because then it adds so much more to this thing, because I think most people, when you're reading this whole, when you get to the scene, whether you're watching the show or you're reading the books, I feel like so much of this feels like Rob's fault, right? Because Rob is, especially I think more in the show, because in the books, Jane Westerling kind of comes out of nowhere. But in the show, he's having the, with Talia or whatever her name is, where they kind of sub her in. Like, it's, you see it building, right? We actually get to see that thing building, and he makes the decision knowing that he's promised to another. Mm-hmm. All of that stuff. So the whole thing feels like it's really Rob's fault. But the line Jamie Lannister sends his regards,
the last thing Rob ever hears.
Yeah, it adds so much more to this, actually, that, well, part of this is actually Catelyn's fault.
Well, yeah, and think about Rob's last moments, right? He hears this. Oh, if my mom had just not given up Jamie dead. Like, yep. That is
huge,
heart wrenching. That is crushing. And then Catelyn goes mad.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she literally just loses it. And I can't blame her. I think in that moment, that's exactly what it, when she's like talking to Ned, like Bran, Rickon, Rob, like, it's like, dude, it is so brutal. It's so brutal, man.
Whew. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. It's good. So I see some people on Reddit talking about that line as well. And talking about, so in a Storm of Swords, there is a Jaime chapter where the Jaime and Roose Bolton leave Harrenhal at the same time. So yeah. Jaime obviously says both parties left Harrenhal the same morning beneath a cold gray sky that promised rain. Sir Aenys Frey had marched 3 days before, striking northeast for the King's Road. Bolton meant to follow him. The Trident is in flood, he told Jaime. Even at the Ruby Ford, the crossing will be difficult. You will give my warm regards to your father. So long as you give mine to Robb Stark. That I shall.
Jaime. Yeah, and I remember that Jaime line. Six, and I was
Jaime
like,
here's the Storm of Swords.
Yeah, I said, here in a few weeks, we'll be coming back to that line. And here we are. And also, like, as a reader, right? We are kind of witnessing a turning of sorts with Jaime at this point. I think his redemption arc is really in Feast for Crows, but we absolutely get the groundwork laid here, and we are starting to feel positive things for Jaime, I think, at this point. So that line obviously has something to do with the characters in the story, and we've kind of discussed the complexity of that. But as the reader, it also reminds you that, like, oh yeah, Jaime is still on the other side of this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Man.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's so good. And like you said, those last moments, like the last moment of Rob and the last moment of, last moment of Rob and the last moment of Catelyn. And you can now tell why they were so pissed that Jane Westerling, right, wasn't there.
Yeah. Yeah. They were a little offended that wasn't there. And also they end up losing the Blackfish, right? Blackfish ends up getting out, which is huge piece of Feast for Crows. Do you feel, and I'll bring up the show. So obviously in the show, are we going to call her Jane just for?
I think I'll look it up. I'm pretty sure it's Talia. Whatever. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But she's pregnant. Rob's wife, and she's there. So she is killed and stabbed in the stomach as she's pregnant. I'm going to be honest with you, Matt. I don't think that change. So I'm not one of the people that's like, this is too much or whatever. But the scene doesn't actually need that, I don't think. I think that kind of goes into how Dan and Dave really did lean into the shock a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think this scene in the book loses anything by not having that. If anything, it's a little more interesting, the fact that Jane is alive.
Yeah, it's Talicia, actually.
I couldn't remember.
She's not important. Yeah. No, I don't think it loses anything. In fact, actually, I think it's, I mean, they're both good. There's way more to add to the story for her potentially being pregnant and with
Winter
and
all that interesting stuff.
There's way more to it in the books. I mean, it's so hard to tell because we don't know where that's going to go, but
right.
And maybe that's supposed to be a 5-year time jump thing, right? Where she has the baby and now the baby could become king and all of that. So even George maybe went back and rethought that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
We don't know. That seems like where it's ultimately heading. But yeah, I think they're both good. I think her dying adds more to the impact of the show, but ultimately, did it affect anything in the show? No, I don't think so. I don't think it was a negative. It affected anything negatively in the show. If anything, I think it added.
Yeah, I'm not mad they did it, but I also could hear an argument that like it wasn't really necessary. Like I can hear that argument because I think even without them in the show, it still would have been amazing. Because let's be honest, the actress for Catelyn Stark, I can't remember her name. I mean, that's one of the all-time best scenes.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh,
what a performance.
Like, yeah, yeah. Yeah, and then what's her name? Who's Rob Starr's wife is like Charlie Chaplin's granddaughter or whatever. And
if you actually, what, really?
If you look at photos of them side by side, you're like, oh, yeah.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Oh, Chuck Chaplin?
Yeah, her name is Ona Chaplin. Yeah. But
interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, if she had survived in the show, I don't would it have made a big...
I mean, not with the endpoints that we got.
Big difference. It really would have ultimately hurt Sansa's story, right? Because now it's like, oh, now there is a Stark.
Well, it depends if you like where Sansa's stories went, because I didn't.
I actually thought that was okay. I like that, where she's queen in the north and she's...
I'm fine with that. I don't like the Ramsay stuff at all.
Oh, yeah.
I hate all of that shit.
I don't. I didn't.
That was one of the things in the show, like, that I didn't like earlier on. Like, I know everyone said it all fell apart in season 7-8, but I remember when this was happening, I was like, I don't like this.
That whole thing, in all honesty, just real quick criticism of the show here. That is one of the things it makes Littlefinger just seem dumb.
It just seemed to line up,
that's one of the best things about the books, right? Is that Littlefinger does not make that mistake of sending Sansa to, because that was like, even in the, when I was watching the show, it's like, it totally justifies them killing Littlefinger. And she's like, you sent me there. And it's,
yeah,
especially after she like gets power over him and she's like, well, I'll tell people about the moon door and stuff. Yeah, I think that's a lot of people really just point to season 8 and stuff like that. And sometimes people point to the cracks in the show of not having, but I think that is arguably one of the worst moments in the show for Littlefinger's character. And it totally just shows they had no idea what to do. He was the first character where you could tell they had no idea what to do with.
Yes, absolutely. And I think it also robs a ton from Sansa's character. Like Sansa could have been doing almost anything else, you know? So for me, again, it's not the worst thing that she gets killed here in the show, but I just think the book way of doing it's just more interesting.
Overall. Yeah, because the fact that she's not there, it gives you actually a little bit of hope coming out of this whole thing, right? Like,
yeah, and George is building towards hope, by the way. A lot of people say it's all about nihilism and this shit. No, it's not. No, it's not.
Yeah. So here's something, right? So when she's at the end, when she is crawling, like she calls for mercy. Catelyn cried, but the horns and drums, clash of steel, smothered her plea. You know, you see Daisy get an axe in the stomach. It kind of continues on here. There was a dagger on the floor a few feet away. Perhaps it had been skittered there when the small John knocked the table off its trestles, or perhaps it had fallen from the hands of some dying man. Catelyn crawled towards it. Her limbs were leaden, and the taste of blood was in her mouth. I will kill Walder Frey, she told herself. Jingle Bell was closer to the knife, hiding under the table. I will kill the old man. I can do that much, at least. So...
maybe she will.
Do you think it's more likely, and we've talked about this, that Arya is the one who kills all of them, or that Catelyn is the one who kills Walder Frey?
I think it's Catelyn. I think Catelyn is going to... there's a lot of setup in Feast to illustrate the fact that there's probably going to be like some sort of like redemption at our wedding, like revenge at our wedding, like a Red Wedding 2.0, mm-hmm. where the Freys get it. And I do believe that Catelyn will be involved some way in his death. I don't think it'll be Arya. I could be wrong.
Yeah.
I don't hate if it's Arya. I wouldn't mind if it's Arya.
Because I think a lot of that stuff that happens, and this is there's so many pieces to it, right? But to me, and this is the thing I've talked about for years, I think Clegane Bowl is happening earlier, which, you know, you try to look at some of the routes the show went. All that stuff with the Brotherhood Without Banners and the Hound, none of that stuff is happening in the books.
Yeah.
Because it seems more likely that she's going to build up a bigger Brotherhood Without Banners army. That's going to have some significance to it.
I mean, it's kind of what's happening, right? And they're going after people, that people are disappearing. And we know that George has hinted the fact that Jane would make an appearance in the prologue of Winds of Winter. We don't know if that's still the case, but he hinted at that. And I wonder if Jane Westerling's going to see her should have been mother-in-law, which would be wild.
Yeah. And if she's pregnant, or I don't think she's going to blame her or anything.
Could you imagine if Winds opens up and Jane's pregnant, like confirmed?
I think she has to be. Otherwise,
I think she is. I think she is.
Yeah, there's no point of even bringing her back. Like that's the whole reason. There's no point in her. That's why the show did what it did. Is because they knew they weren't going to go in any route in which the Talicia, his wife in the show, was pregnant and it had any impact. So George obviously kept her alive for a reason.
Oh,
and
for
that
sure.
That reason has to be that she's pregnant. Now, whether she loses the child and it's meant to be even more dread that, hey, the Starks are really dead and there's nothing. Right. And then it comes back to Bran or Sansa or Arya or whoever.
And Jaime is really worried about this, by the way. And Feast, yeah. I think it's Feast. He's like, you know, if she gets out, that's a bigger deal than Blackfish or Edmure. Like, she's the one we can't lose. And of course, the Freys are going to fuck it up, right? Like they're going to do a terrible job.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So yeah, it has to come back to bite the Freys in the end, her character and everything. So yeah, I think ultimately she's going to be pregnant. Is she going to have the baby before the end? I don't think so, because I mean, the baby could be born and maybe this baby will be. Maybe I don't know how they're gonna do that. Maybe if Bran becomes king and Sansa doesn't become, say, queen in the north, then maybe this baby will be the king and somebody Sansa serves as queen regent until the baby comes of age,
something like that. Yeah, I mean, that's totally possible.
At that point, no, I guess that would still be the true heir, right? Because that would be Ned Stark's grandson. Because with Ned Stark to Rob to his son outweighs Rickon.
Right? I think. Right. I'm not very good at the
monarchy. Yes. Yeah, it's a straight line unless like something happens.
Yeah, which lots has happened.
Right. So, but if Bran becomes king, then... and the baby is not born, then Rickon would be, you know, by sort of law and custom, the new heir.
Okay, that makes sense. So this kid is obviously super important. Like really very, important. Very, very
yeah,
important.
For sure. Yeah.
I think is going to exist, by the way. I do think would exist.
Oh, yeah. I agree. Okay, let's we'll talk a little bit more about some of the things here at the end of the chapter here. So like you said, she presses the blade deeper into Jingle Bell's throat. The liquid rolled his eyes at her in a mute appeal. A mute appeal is about to be what she is. She's about to be mute in a way, right? She's gonna have to cover her own throat. The foul stench assailed her nose, but she paid no more mind to it. And then she did the sullen, ceaseless pounding of that drum. Boom, doom, boom, doom, boom, doom. And that drum, which had started, right, was continuing on. And Catelyn, even here at the end of it, I think she knows she's going to die, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's like all the issue, but she did not care. She had lived too long, and Ned was waiting. It was Rob she feared for. Oh, my honor as a Tully, she told Lord Walder. On my honor as a Stark, I will trade your boy's life for Rob's, a son for a son. And I think she just knows that he's not going to.
Oh, it's a Hail Mary.
Yeah, because he's already abandoned the gift of I forget what it's called. House Rite or whatever. I don't know why I'm blanking on it today, but essentially, yeah. Right, where he's your guest. And
breaking bread, you're safe.
For sure. Yeah. And then a man in dark armor and pale pink cloak spotted with blood stepped up to Rob. Jaime Lannister sends his regards. That is Bruce Bolton. But yeah. And then they keep doing that boom, doom, boom, doom things. It hurts so much. She thought our children, Ned, all our sweet babies, Rickon, Bran, Arya, Sansa, Rob. Rob, please, Ned, please make it stop. Please make it stop hurting. The white tears and red ones ran together until her face was torn and tattered. The face that Ned had loved. Catelyn Stark raised her hands and watched the blood run down her long fingers over her wrist beneath the sleeves of her gown. Slow red worms crawled along her arms and under her clothes. It tickles, and she that made her laugh until she screamed. Mad, someone said, she's lost her wits. And someone else said, make an end. A hand grabbed her scalp, just as she'd done with Jingle Bell, and she thought, no, don't cut my hair. Ned loves my hair. Then the steel at her throat, and it was a bite with red and cold.
Red and cold, yeah. What a description on that, huh?
Yeah.
But you see, he's not saying anything. Like, in that moment, Catelyn knew she was done. Or, like you know, such plain...
Right.
Tell it just, you
it just is it just is the act.
It's her POV. It's truly her POV in what would be the worst moment of her entire life and the last moments of her entire life. It takes a lot of skill to write that way and to deliver it, make it satisfying and kind of let us sit with the last period of the chapter. We sit there and we just stare at the page like, wait, what? Like, you're like, what just happened? Is this a metaphor? Please tell me it's some weird metaphor.
Yeah. Let me read a quote here. This is from the Song of Ice Fire reread subreddit, commenting on it, saying he has Ned's gift for inspiring loyalty. Is there a chapter which has more music in it than Catelyn 7? Mm-hmm. From drums and fiddles and bagpipes to body songs, the music serves as an introduction to that most ominous of songs, the Reigns of Castamere. The reader is beautifully prepared for this moment, with the song having been discussed by Tyrion and later Sir Jaime Lannister in A Storm of Swords. It's even mentioned again in Arya 7. Tom's Seven Strings replaced a string on his wooden harp and sang the mother tears when Willem's wife was wet. Lord Hart rode out on a rainy day, and then the Reigns of Castamere. Most importantly, Arya 7 includes the lyrics of the song, which in Catelyn 7 will be intertwined with the massacre that is preceded over by Wald Frey. His chair was black oak, and its black carved in the semblance of two stout towers joined by an arched bridge, so massive that its embrace turned to the old man into a grotesque child. This reference is a curious one, since it takes us back to Walder Frey's debut in The Mystery Knight. Lord Walder of the Crossing was a lean man, elegant in blue and gray. His hair, a chinless boy of four whose nose was dripping snot. Says Catelyn's chapter was not an easy one to read. Walder's cruel gibes directed to the dying king still affect me even on a fourth reread. And then they get to Greywind, which is even more tough. That is one of the when they have the wolf hat on the spike.
I mean, we're not through it yet. Yeah, there's still more treachery to go.
Yeah, we still have more to go and next week too.
Man.
It's a tough one, man. I think it's the toughest chapter to read in the whole series.
Yeah. And also, you know, it's one of those things where a lot of work was put in to make us feel this way. It didn't just happen. These characters are people that we feel like we know. And I guess in some cases love, some of us get frustrated with them, of course, but you don't just get the shock value is one thing, but the impact is earned. I believe.
Yeah. Now, this could kind of take us to a fun thing to hear, as a lot of people think Rob dies twice by working into Grey Wind, and then Grey Wind dies. Do you think that's
no? But it doesn't hurt anything. Then, like, it doesn't do anything. So, like, people can believe that. That's fine. Like,
right.
It's not the case. I don't think. But maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. If Robin had Grey Wind in there with him, would it have changed? I don't think it really would have changed much.
I think Walder Frey thought so, and that's why he said you got to leave that damn dog outside.
Certainly some more people would have died. Maybe he would have been able to get out of there, but...
I mean, you only need a couple seconds to dash out that door.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, I think he probably would have been killed out there, too. But, yeah, I mean, Walder Frey thought it was a big enough threat, and Walder Frey, if anyone's going to mess anything up, it'd be him. So I do think that it would have made some difference.
Yeah. So ultimately, the Red Wedding, whose fault, who does the blame lie on the most?
Oh, bro. I don't know. Ned Stark.
Ned, do you think the blame should lie more on Rob or more on Catelyn?
I mean, are we victim blaming? Is that what we're doing here? Are we victim
blaming? Well, I mean, it's just, you know, that's the thing is everyone talks about, well, you know, everyone goes down the what if path of if the Red Wedding hadn't
it's
happened.
Rob. It's Rob.
You think Rob more than Catelyn?
It's Rob. Yeah. Yeah. If Rob doesn't cross Frey, I don't think Frey does this.
As long as he marries his daughter,
That's all Frey wanted. And Rob made a decision, and that decision as a leader has a lot of weight and responsibility behind it. And he messed up.
Rob also is the one who lets Theon go take the North, which makes them have to try to turn back.
Yeah. I think Rob is at fault here. Yeah. Hate to say about my boy. I hate speaking ill of the dead.
But Catelyn let Tyrion go, and Catelyn let Jaime go,
I mean, there's a lot there. There's a lot there. I mean, you could almost blame Lyza Arryn.
Right. I know, we
can keep rolling this back. You know, it's
could, but I mean, this whole thing I think comes down to their decisions.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
is who it ultimately comes down to is much more. It's really Catelyn and Rob's story.
It is, and I think because we can pinpoint like the Freys are what makes this happen, right? It's a pivotal piece of
the Boltons are just as complicit in it.
Well,
and if Jaime Lannister is never there to make a deal with Roose Bolton and Harrenhal because they still have him captive.
Hey, I'll tell you what, Matt, how about this? Now, this is a big
because maybe Rob could have still married Jane Westerling. If they had a Jaime Lannister captive and they don't take him to the wedding, they have him off somewhere.
Yeah. I mean,
and you kill them, then maybe the Lannisters aren't as quick to push on. Let's make this deal and kill all the
Starks. Comes back to Rob making this mistake.
I don't know. I think you could make the argument that it all comes back to Catelyn.
Well, I tell you what, you might be right, and I'll tell you why. There's a key difference between the show and the books, okay? In the book, at the beginning, in A Game of Thrones, Catelyn wants Ned to go to King's Landing. Ned doesn't want to go. In the show, they flip it. Ned wants to go. Catelyn doesn't want him to go.
Right.
And kind of like the begrudging, like, something's off here. But in the book, which is what we're talking about, Catelyn tells Ned he needs to go.
Yeah.
If Ned refuses Robert, we probably don't get any of this, right?
Yeah.
So maybe it is all Catelyn's fault. I just think even down the decision line, though, like.
I mean, they're both. It might just be that it's 50-50.
I mean, this is why this is so fun to talk about. And still relevant many, many years later is because it is just like history. When we look back, and sure, let's say World War One, right? The assassination. Okay, that's what sparked it. But was it? Was it?
No, or, there's
a lot of going there's, on, there's right? No, there's a lot of people to look at.
There's so much more that goes into World War One.
George was building a complete web. I mean, how many houses are involved in this thing? It's kind of insane when you think about the scale of the Red Wedding, and then the end result feels so intimate with Catelyn at the end. But it's massive geopolitical.
Here's a fun what if. What if the Purple Wedding happens first? It could still exist that the Red Wedding takes place second. Because the Purple Wedding seems like it's happening no matter like regardless of what happens at the Red Wedding, the Purple Wedding is taking place because the Tyrells are like, yeah, we're not going to be marrying Joffrey.
Honestly, it might have tipped Catelyn and Rob off to not feel so comfortable at a wedding.
Yeah.
Now you can
it could make them feel more confident. Because now they feel like the war is mostly over because there's so much chaos down there. The Red Wedding actually might not happen.
Well, I say, does Walter turn coat? Does he back off?
Probably not, because he probably thinks that the Lannisters aren't as powerful as they thought. Because now they're in total turmoil. Because the Purple, I don't think the Purple Wedding happens because the Red Wedding happened, right? Like, it's not like, oh, look, the Starks are out and now it's our time to, it's our time to strike now that the Starks, the Purple Wedding is happening regardless of what happens here.
I will also say this. I don't think Joffrey Baratheon dying is anywhere near as relevant to the war effort than Robb Stark dying.
For sure.
Like, honestly, the Lannisters are probably in a better position with Joffrey dead. So I'm not so sure the Starks would feel this like we're have the upper hand. Cause like, if anything, someone more capable, like Tywin can, you know, I mean, obviously Tywin's regent, whatever, but like, you know what I'm saying? Like, Joffrey's actually a detriment.
It might have even ended the war.
Maybe. Maybe.
Because, especially because a lot of people blame Sansa for it. Sansa and Tyrion are the one. I mean, but like a lot of, like, you know, because they don't really ever like announce to the people who did it. Right.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
But it's a lot of people think Sansa because she fled. Right. Like townsfolk people think that. So common folk. Right. So, I mean, yeah, it's kind of. It's kind of interesting to think about all the different.
Would Baelish have taken Sansa back to Catelyn?
Maybe.
Shoot, that's interesting to think about.
Yeah, because the Purple Wedding, I think is regardless of what happens here, is happening. We're like 100%, no question.
Yeah.
Whatsoever.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I mean, it kind of affects Tyrion a little bit more.
Oh yeah, I mean that's kind of the big moment for him. Oh, we're talking about turning points. I mean, for Tyrion, it's the biggest.
Yeah, because even the Red Wedding is pretty important to Tyrion because now they're pushing. Now they're really pushing on him to get Sansa pregnant.
Like, and then marriage. Yeah,
yeah, he goes up in flames with Shay and everything, and
ends up.
Yeah, it's why it's arguably the single most important moment in the entire series.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
In terms of total like global impact. I think it has to be number one.
Yeah, I would agree. It's the biggest geopolitical event at this point.
Yeah, because it literally affects.
I mean, we could go back, right? Like we could go back like Robert's Rebellion. Then
for sure. And Rebellion. But in the main A Song of Ice and Fire series. Yes. Yeah, I would say. Yeah, it's probably the most important.
I agree.
Okay. Oof. All right, man. Anything else you want to hit on this?
We made it. We did it. And the fact that we have so much more to go. Yeah.
We really have one more Red Wedding chapter, and that's next week.
And then it's off to the next climax of this absurd book.
Yeah. There's got to be some Daenerys chapters coming up, right? I mean, I believe so. I know the next week is an Arya chapter where we get the final fallout and we get the spikes in the head. And it's like the least favorite part of the whole series. And then, yes, then we go to Tyrion. Oh, then Davos. Then there's a Daenerys chapter coming. But see, that's my thing about Daenerys chapters is when I'm looking at the thing here, the last Daenerys chapter was 42. You don't have another Daenerys chapter until 57. After that, the next one isn't even until 71.
Yeah.
He almost should have just written these as like separate books. Yeah, I mean,
the fact that it's all one is like,
I know, it's insane. That's the biggest. It gets much better in Dance of Dragons once other people are over in Essos, but the Daenerys chapters, especially in Game of Thrones, you can almost read them, and that's why they did whatever published that one thing where it's literally almost you could just read the Daenerys chapters by themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think next week we might try to do have a Patreon episode out as well. I have a pretty fun little theory we're going to dive into. Somebody who pretty much called one for one, like almost everything that would happen going before season 5 of Game of Thrones. Just kind of fun to look in that and see what people were thinking. So, but with that, we want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. Our next episode will be discussing A Storm of Swords, Chapter 52, Arya 11.
And if you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com or bendtheknee@podcast.com.
We'll see you next time. And remember that winter is coming.